PhD candidate in the UNL Department of Agronomy and Horticulture. He received his Bachelor's of Science from Zamorano University in Honduras and his Master of Science from the UNL Plant Pathology Department. After receiving his bachelor's degree, he spent 4 years working for the Central American Dry Bean Research Program, so he should have very much enjoyed the earlier talks in this session. Here he worked in breeding for yield and quality, and varieties were delivered to subsistence farmers. Later, after receiving his master's degree, he joined a balsa wood forestry company in Ecuador, where he developed the world's first balsa wood breeding program. And he is going to present his work on mineral bioavailability in low phytic acid wheat. Jorge?
Thanks, Mary. Hi, everyone. Well, first of all, I would like to thank to the organizing committee of this session for inviting me again this year. Hopefully you enjoy my presentation and the data that I want to show you. Well, I would like to start talking about the biofortification approaches that you can follow in order to biofortify crops. One is increasing micronutrients and another one is decreasing antinutrients. Specifically for wheat, we have two very good sources for each of these approaches. One is if we want to increase micronutrients, we can use the GPCB1 allele, which accelerates senescence and increase nutrients, remobilization, and grape protein content. As you can see, in this picture, there is this line, experimental line, that senescence earlier than the two lines just next to it, that they don't have the GPCB1 allele. For another approach, decreasing antinutrients, we have LPA1 allele, which is the only mutant that reduces phytic acid content in wheat kernel up to the 35%. You can see in this chart, the wild type of wheat variety, most of the phosphorus in this kernel is in the phytic acid form, and just a little bit is just in an inorganic phosphate form. But in the mutant kernel, it is pretty much reversed. The rate is reversed, and the phytic acid form with the anorganic form is pretty much the same. So for our specific project, we combine these two approaches, increasing micronutrients and decreasing antinutrients, in order to biofortify or try to deliver biofortification wheat. So I would like to talk a little bit general information about the phytic acid. The phytic acid, as many of you said, is the main reservoir of phosphorus in seed. It represents 65 to 85% of the total phosphorus. It's found mainly in alluron layer. The alluron layer, as you can see here, is between the pericarp and the endoscarp. But in wheat, specifically, the alluron layer is attached to the pericarp during milling. So it is present in the bran. And the bran, of course, has a lot of phytic acid. But the downside part of phytic acid is that decreases gut absorption of the valine elements, such as calcium, iron, and zinc, in monogastric animals, including humans. But if we talk about animal systems production, so it can cause a lot of pollution from animal waste, because a lot of these animal production systems, they use bran in the feeding. So if we take in consideration that 45 to 90 million metric tons of bran are produced annually worldwide, and most of these bran is going to these animal feeding systems, so we can have a lot of pollution, you know, out of these systems. But the most important thing is that the high phytic acid diets contribute and increase mineral deficiencies in poor populations in developing countries. But also we see the whole picture. The U.S. exports like 27 million metric tons of wheat every year, and mainly to developing countries. So if we can do something to reduce the phytic acid, you know, in the wheat that it is exporting to these developing countries, in some way we're gonna help, you know, like the nutrition of these people living in these poor countries. With this, we came up with the hypothesis that if we combine the low phytate and high protein content alleles and into the grain plains, adapted weeds, we will increase iron, zinc, and phosphorus concentration, and other minerals, and bioavailability without negatively affecting yield, which is pretty, it is pretty hard, because most of these quality traits are negatively correlated with yield. Talking a little bit about materials and method, the whole picture is like, okay, we develop our biparental population out of the, taking one of the parentals is the donor of the GPCB1, another parental is actually the low phytate mutant donor. Advancing the offspring to F5 generation, we phenotype and genotype these populations for low phytate and also for GPC. So having that data, we created four different genotypes. One group that contained the two alleles, another group that contained just one allele, LPA, which is low phytate, and another group that has a GPC allele. And the last group actually doesn't contain any of the alleles, just to test the effect of these alleles actually in the concentration and bioavailability of the nutrients. So these allelic groups were tested in the field, and we also made soil samples just to see any effect, confounding effect of the soil nutrients actually in the final concentration of grain nutrients. So after harvesting, the total concentrations of minerals were tested, and also the dialyzed part of those nutrients were tested. I'm going to talk more about it later. So really fast, the experimental design was a randomized complete block design with 10 adaptive lines and two parents as a checks, plus 39 recombinant inbred lines. So these were tested in four different locations in the eastern and the western part of Nebraska, which are pretty different environments. And they were replicated in 2 years, 2016 and 2017. The variables were several, but of course, I want to show in this presentation the results of the total grain mineral content together with the dialyzed mineral content. I want to say later why I'm showing these two ones. And one of the things that I really want to address is that in 2016 we collected 376 samples, and 2017 we collected 400 samples. So in total we're almost 800 samples that we needed to analyze. So, and that's a challenge. So especially when you are working in a winter wheat program, so really fast, this is how a winter wheat program works. So we plant our materials around October, September, October, the seedlings are over winter, and then they are going to start growing again in April, and we're going to harvest around July. But from here to planting again, we have two to three months to take decisions. That means like we need to analyze, we need to do all the work with the seed and take decisions. So what happens when you have 400 samples to analyze, you know, for bioavailability? That is going to be a big bottleneck. So we decide, in order to test or to have some idea, you know, about the dialysis fraction of the nutrients in the wheat kernel, we decide to use dialysis methodology. The dialysis methodology pretty much consists, you know, in using, in this case, we bought these plates from Thermo Fisher, where they have two columns, one where you put the sample with the digestive enzymes, and then you collect all the dialyzed elements in the buffer in another chamber. So you can process 48 samples in just one plate. So, and this is pretty much how the high throughput dialysis protocol works. So we use a genome grinder, and the genome grinder basically is a machine that pretty much grinds the seed really fast and pulverize. You have a flour, like a whole wheat flour really fast. After that, you use 20 milligrams of that flour, and you add it to the red plate, to the dialysis plate, that together with pepsin and pancreatin bile, so you simulate what happens during digestions, you know, in the gastric digestion and intestinal digestions. And after some shaking and incubation, you collect the dialysis buffer, which is sodium bicarbonate, and then you run the analysis for micronutrients. So in overall, so this is how much you spend in time and also in money. So loading and grinding the samples for 48 samples, you're going to spend an hour. And this is the part, the bottleneck of the protocol, which is loading samples into the red plates. This is the name of the plates, actually. So you spend like 2 hours to load 48 samples. But at the end, after you load all the samples, basically you're going to spend 5 hours running all the 400 samples that you collected from the field for 1 year. So it's pretty fast. So, and you're paying around $10 per sample in general, running this protocol. So right now, I just want to show really fast the results. I'm running out of time. Okay, thanks. The first slide that I'm going to show you per element is going to be the total concentration of the grain in that element. And the next slide is going to be the dialyzed element. So you can follow me better. So for total iron concentration, we didn't find any significant difference between the genotypes. We also didn't find any significant difference in the dialyzed iron or soluble iron between the genotypes, unfortunately. For total phosphorus, we found significant difference between the genotypes, specifically between the genotypes that has the low phytate allele. The low phytate allele, it seems like reduced the total concentration of phosphorus in the kernel. Okay, but interestingly, we found that after dialysis, the low phytate, and this was expected, the low phytate allele increased the soluble phosphorus in the kernel. That means like we didn't find any difference between the genotypes, but actually these two groups that they have the low phytate allele catch up the other groups that didn't have the allele. For total concentration of zinc, we didn't find any difference between the groups. But after dialysis, we found significant difference between the groups that contain the low phytate allele and the groups that they don't have the allele. That's pretty interesting. For calcium, we also found no significant difference between the groups in the total concentration of calcium in the kernel. And we found significant difference between, again, the low phytate groups. The low phytate groups, they have like more concentration of dialyzed calcium in the kernel than the groups that didn't have the allele. So as a final take-home message is that the LPA-GP-SYN combination, the combination of these two alleles, and the LPA allele groups alone, increased the concentration of dialyzed zinc and calcium. There were no significant differences in dialyzed iron and phosphorus among the genotypes. However, as I mentioned before, we found that the LPA allele reduced the total concentration of phosphorus, but increased the dialyzed concentration of phosphorus. Okay, so that's pretty interesting. But we have suggestion of future work. I mean, and there is still future work that need to be done. We need to optimize the protocol. We found traces of nutrients in this enzyme stocks. Right now we are trying to purify these enzyme stocks in order to optimize the protocol. But overall, we need to validate these results using an in vivo calcutta cells model just to see if we are going to see the same difference and the same results. Because what we're wrong here is not actually a bioavailability test. What we're actually wrong here is bioaccessibility test, which is just the first part of the entire bioavailability protocol. With that, I just want to thanks to my committee member. This is part of my dissertation. As Mary said, I just finished my PhD. I'm also the USDA ARS staff, the UNL WIT staff, and Redox Biology Center that actually run the analysis. With that, thank you very much. I would like to answer some questions.
Okay, we have time for some questions.
Sure.
Results that you showed us, because when we've done bioaccessibility, I mean, those enzymes have all kinds of mineral salts on it,
Sure. We didn't clean it up. Initially, we are trying to make trying to find a correction curve for those enzymes, but they are pretty hard to clean. I mean, we are running some dialysis treatments with the enzymes, but you know, like you are running out of time doing that because then you are going to kill the enzyme. So yeah, but we are working on it. Tom. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Actually, this is biparental population without, we didn't make crosses actually in this specific population with pretty high adapted materials. So the yield actually was lower than the adapted materials. But we have another population, actually several populations that may already have those materials, that we didn't find any significant difference with the adapted controls in yield. So they performed pretty well. Sure.
Right. It seems to me that if you use the same enzyme preparation in every single sample that you process and you find significant differences, that means you still have significant differences even though there's background.
Exactly.
Is there some other factor that we're missing?
Some of the factors?
You didn't, I mean, you still saw significant differences.
Absolutely.
Even though you had the background.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that's why we need to validate this data.
Any other questions? So I'll ask one more question.
Sure.
George Dukowski has made quite a bit of, I mean, there's been quite a bit of press about positive effects of the GPC allele on improving micronutrient concentration. Why do you think you didn't see that?
With this population, as I said before, it didn't have a shot of adaptation, you know, for the gray plains. What George Dukowski found is actually with material that they were pretty well adapted, but it has the integration of this gene. So that means, like, again, we didn't find like pretty good yield in this population related with the adaptive materials, but we found a pretty good yield, you know, like when we use actually a population pretty well adapted to the area. So, but it means like yield, it also has to be in some way with the concentration of the mineral or the performance of the GPCB1 allele. The more adapted, the better.
Thank you.
Thanks.